This is Relevant in Rome, a weekly podcast from the Vatican with Relevant Radio Rome correspondent Ashley Nerona. Now here's the latest on Pope Francis and all that's happened in Rome this week.
What was the main message of Pope Francis on this morning?
Well, John, as he continued his discussion on apostolic zeal, today he looked at St. Josephine Baquita as a model for that. He said that she really shows us the way to be free of the chains of fear, how to overcome resentment, how to overcome hypocrisy. And he spoke about her suffering that she endured in her life. She, as a young girl, was kidnapped. She was born in Sudan. She was sold into slavery there. Now, at some point in her life, one of her guardians gave her a crucifix. This was the only possession that she had, and she just treasured it. And Pope Francis today pointed out that through that crucifix, she found true freedom. She found the power to forgive, source of merciful love that affirms all of our innate dignity as God's children. And with that, she made this decision eventually to herself become to serve others humbly. She developed such a great devotion to Christ and to his cross. And Pope Francis today said that her example of zeal really shows God's power of grace to transform lives, as well as to resolve conflicts and to bring justice and peace to the world. And he pointed out the amazing example of forgiveness, the ability to forgive that St. Josephine had, and how forgiveness really adds to our dignity. It also helps us, he said, to see others as fragile beings, just like all of us are as well. And he said that forgiveness is a source of zeal that becomes mercy, as we saw in the life of St. Josephine. And I have to tell you, John, I have a personal love for her because she was my saint of the year a few years ago. Every year on the Feast of All Saints, my husband John and I choose our saints of the year. And I loved the opportunity to get to know her a little bit better. And also recently, my husband John and I were in Washington, D.C. at the Museum of the Bible there. And we're very happy to see that she's featured there as well. And in the audience today as well, the Pope asked everyone to pray especially for the people of Sudan. He spoke about the terrible armed conflict that has gone on there for so many years and asked all to pray that that land will soon live in peace, John.
Well, Ashley, as speaking of armed conflicts, obviously on the minds of so many people all around the world and the Holy Father as well, the Pope called for peace in Israel and Hamas with the war, which is now in day five. Can you share with us the Holy Father's message on the importance of seeking peace?
Yes, indeed. So as part of the audience today, Pope Francis asked everyone to pray for the families in that area. And he said specifically, those families who were seeing a day of celebration that turned into a day of mourning. He specifically today asked for the immediate release of hostages by Hamas. He mentioned the right of those being attacked to defend themselves. But he asked for what he called restraint on both sides to seek to find a solution. And he said that terrorism and extremism do not help find solutions. He said that these things fuel hatred, and this causes suffering on both sides. So instead today, John, he called for fraternity and dialogue amongst all.
It's a very, very difficult situation, obviously, between Israel and Hamas. But yes, he did emphasize that Israel does have the right to defend themselves, but they yes, they need to do it in a correct way. And you know, yesterday we talked about the just war. theory that the church teaches. And this is not just a Catholic teaching, but something that needs to be observed in all conflicts.
Exactly. And his call really for restraint on both sides to find a solution, this idea that he is asking them to instead come to a situation of dialogue, to in fraternity, to find the solution. So that's, of course, what we pray for.
Well, nothing is impossible with God, and lots of prayers are needed, because it looks like the situation is going to be getting even worse here in the upcoming days, with Israel looking really to possibly invade on the ground.
Yes, yes, indeed it is. And by the grace of God, we do have the power of prayer. We have a friend who is there on the ground and has been keeping John and me and some of our friends posted as to what she's experiencing. And she decided to stay. She's a Canadian citizen, but decided to raise families. So she's sending out messages trying to help get people out. And it's just incredible to see what's happening.
Did your friend give you a sense of what it was like the day of the attacks? How close was she to the Gaza border?
You know, she didn't mention that specifically, but what she has been talking about is the incredible sense of fear that she's experiencing from people around her. She seems to be very courageous and very resilient, but she's saying that some people have just become absolutely paralyzed and they feel hopeless. So we certainly pray especially for them at this moment, and to use the words from the audience today, that they be freed from those chains of fear.
Well, Ashley, we've seen a reaction from all over the world, from world leaders, from Great Britain, from Germany. What has been the Italian government's response to this war in Israel with Hamas?
Yes. So the Italian government yesterday voted unanimously to stop all institutional aid that could potentially be aiding Hamas, that could be helping Hamas in any way. So they're going to work with various diplomatic partners to make sure that that happens. In the meantime, yesterday, four planes landed in Rome at a military base here in Rome, carrying about 500 Italian citizens. So the idea was to repatriate them back into Italy. And in the meantime, our Prime Minister, Giorgia Meloni, visited yesterday the Rome synagogue. She had some talks with the chief rabbi there, and she also spoke. And in her words, she pledged to step up protection, especially of Italian Jews. She warned against the reality of the possibility of copycats, so people taking advantage of this situation and inflicting violence specifically on that ethnic population, on the Jewish population. And so, but indeed, she said that security will be stepped up in the areas, for example, in the Jewish quarter in Rome itself. And also on Monday, Italy issued a joint statement along with leaders from the U.S. and Germany and Britain and France, condemning this war and pledging steadfast and united support with Israel. And then in the meantime, Pope Francis also phoned two times a priest who is there in the Gaza Strip at the Church of the Holy Family, where he, along with 80 other Christians and Muslims, have taken shelter. And the Pope let them know of his prayers for them and imparted his blessing as well, John.
We have seen protests in different parts of the world, in New York City, in Melbourne, Australia, people who are basically with the Palestinians and sympathetic to Hamas. Is there anything like that going on in Rome or Italy?
No, not that I've heard of. There was a pro-Israel manifestation that was going to go on in these next couple of days. I'm not clear on whether or not it was canceled. There was some talk of it not happening now. So, but I haven't heard any support, any particular demonstrations at this moment. The other way doesn't mean that they couldn't be happening.
On a much lighter note, Italian wine producers are reporting a low grape harvest. What is happening there?
Oh, yes, John. Well, you can imagine that Italy is not happy right now because, of course, the Italians are the country is so associated with wine. In fact, there's a saying here in Italy, anni e bicchieri di vino non sono contanto mai. In other words, you don't ever count years. In other words, age. You don't ever count age or glasses of wine. Those are never to be counted. And when they say, of course, when they talk about their wine, they have such pride in it. But this year, the bad news came that Italian wine production had a much, much smaller grape harvest. Production is much lower than in the past. And because of that, that means that the top global spot of the world's greatest wine producer is going to go to France. So that's because France produced 46 million hectoliters of wine this year, which is the same as they produced last year. But this year, Italy produced 43 million hectoliters. And to give you a comparison, they produced 50 million last year. So Italy otherwise had been the leader in global wine production since 2007. But this was a particularly tough year on the grape crop. In fact, there was a problem with mildew. We had the heat waves that you may remember. And so the result of it all was that wine production in general reduced by about 14%. Some vineyards lost up to 50% of their crops this year. Now, I have to tell you, though, that at the beginning of October, the end of September, wine producers in Italy did have lots of rays of hope. They thought that maybe it just might work out because they had very favorable weather, absence of humidity. At night, there was cool nights and hot days, so there's a very wide temperature range between day and night, but it wasn't quite enough to bring back the production. Now, interestingly, John, in the meantime, world demand for wine has gone down by about 7%. And that meant prices were going up. But now Italy's lower production means that there's going to be less pressure on prices. So in the meantime, certainly none of this will dampen the Italians' desire to fare un brindisi, to have a toast, and to say chin chin, which of course they say because it mimics the sound of glasses, those wine glasses tapping each other, or to say salute to your health, John.
Well, salute, and I'm sure there's still plenty of good vino there in Italy for everyone to go around, despite the low grape harvest.
I have a feeling you're right.
Meanwhile, tomorrow is the feast of Blessed Carlo Acutis. How is that being celebrated there in Italy?
Yes, in fact, his big feast day, and he's entombed in the city of Assisi. And I mentioned to you last week that my mom and our very dear friend Trish Marriott are visiting, and so we are going to jump on a train and go spend that feast day with Blessed Carlo Acutis, and we'll have the opportunity to pray there in front of the glass urn where his body is contained. Now, his body, which the church says is decomposing regularly, is inside of a thick wax layer that's been molded to look like his body. So when you are there, when you pray in front of that urn, it's an incredible feeling because you feel like he's right there. You know, he was just 15 years old old when he died in 2006 of leukemia. He was born in 1991. And one of the things we remember him most for is how he documented Eucharistic miracles and Marian apparitions. He had these incredible computer skills. One of the things, though, that really, really amazes me about him is that he was born into a family with parents who did not practice faith. They considered themselves non-religious. But he, on the other hand, had just this incredible love of Jesus. In fact, one summer when he went to stay with his grandparents at the beach, after he would have a day at the beach, he'd walk over to the church and pray the rosary with the elderly there. So he will be celebrated in a big way in Assisi tomorrow with special masses and people coming from far and wide to pray in front of his tomb. While in the meantime, today, people are going over to St. Peter's Basilica to pray at the tomb of Pope St. John the 23rd, who, of course, was beatified by Pope St. John Paul II and then canonized on the same day with Pope St. John Paul II back in 2013. So he himself, who's in that remarkable state of preservation, we ask these great saints to pray for us, John.
Relevant in Rome is your weekly connection to the Vatican. Listen to live reports from Rome with Ashley Narona every Wednesday morning at 7:30 Eastern, 6:30 Central on Morning Air. And listen right here next week to Relevant in Rome for the latest on Pope Francis and news from the Vatican.